Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. We're going to be touching on three subjects today that could very well involve you or someone you know and love. We're going to open with a representative from Griffin Health to talk a little bit about long COVID and how that health system is working to diagnose and address it. Then we're going to circle back with our local friends from the Lupus Foundation of America to learn how it's supporting research and the day-to-day needs of our neighbors grappling with this insidious illness. And we'll also invite you to walk to find a cure for lupus. Then we're going to wrap with Wheeler Health, which has just opened a groundbreaking program addressing youth mental health response and care in several of their offices, including Waterbury. Could your child or one you know benefit from this initiative? Stay tuned and find out. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Speaking of addressing mental health challenges, NAMI Southwest Connecticut has assembled mental health experts to provide essential information to help navigate and keep everyone safe in a mental health event. Speakers include professionals from the Mobile Crisis Intervention and Evaluation Unit of Stamford and a clinician from Silver Hill Hospital. This Thursday, September 15th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, meet and hear tips from the trenches, navigating a mental health event. Participation is free, but registration is required. For details, just visit NAMISouthwestCT.org. That's NAMISouthwestCT.org. Well, it's always great to visit with our friends down in Derby at Griffin Health, and always wonderful to meet new friends and partners who can bring their knowledge and expertise to helping all the folks who may be listening, no matter where you are across the state of Connecticut or wherever you may have tuned into our podcast today. So Nancy Corvino is with us, and it's wonderful to meet you, Nancy. She is the director of Griffin Health's Rehabilitation Services. And today, as we said in our introduction, we're going to be talking about long COVID and long COVID therapies. So Nancy, I guess the first thing we need to talk about is a little bit of history, because COVID has been with us such a relatively short amount of time, as we know COVID-19 and this global pandemic that we've been dealing with since 2020. At what point do you believe the medical community started to realize that there were haves and have-nots among individuals who contracted COVID-19, and that in fact for certain individuals, it may have been a medical situation that could potentially have stuck with them for quite a long time, if not since they contracted the virus?
Oh, thank you, John, again, for letting us come and talk about this important topic. Really appreciate it. And as you know, many people have suffered from COVID-19. And, you know, what we found, you know, in this journey is that, you know, now at this point, we're seeing more than, you know, 11 million Americans still suffering from COVID-related symptoms. And it's estimated that about 30% of them are still dealing with, you know, COVID-19 or long COVID-19 symptoms. So what we were finding is that we were seeing when people were coming in and wanting to get back to doing the daily activities that they wanted to and needed to get back to doing, they were still seeing that some of these COVID or long COVID symptoms were impacting their ability to be able to get back to doing those things. And these challenges were limiting them from getting back to, say, getting up and down a flight of stairs or getting back to work or back to being with their children or their grandchildren. So our approach here, our patient-centered approach at Griffin Hospital, allowed us the opportunity, while assessing these individuals, to take into account this physical, mental, and emotional health, and we're able to look at creating a unique and customized treatment plan to address these symptoms. With the ability to involve this multidisciplinary approach here that we have from physical, occupational, and speech therapists and cardio and pulmonary rehab and behavioral health services, our team was able to create an approach to look at each of these individual symptoms for them and how they were kind of impacting these everyday activities and looking to really improve their quality of life and get them back to the things that they were doing. So when some of them were perhaps getting COVID at home, they weren't necessarily going to the hospital and getting admitted and following that typical rehab path, but they were living with these symptoms. So it sort of became a new norm for them. So what we found is that we were able to create a program and let them know that they don't have to live in this new normal, but that there are things they can do to be able to get back to the things that they want to be able to do.
So for people listening who are testing positive today, at what point do they seek assistance from organizations like Griffin Health because of prolonged symptoms? Is it weeks? Is it months?
Well, I think at any point in time when there's something that's limiting your quality of life or something you need to be able to do, it's important to realize that you don't have to live with that and that we have resources like here at Griffin Health to be able to get you back to doing those things. So, you know, for some people, they might need a bit of a, you know, acute COVID recovery where they do need to stay home and rest. And then when they're getting back to what they need to do, if they find they can't, this is when they want to tap into those resources. Again, whether it is from weakness or from pain or shortness of breath, there are resources available for them to be able to help them get back to things.
So obviously, Griffin is a world unto itself in terms of your operational jurisdiction, but you're affiliated with Plaintree Network hospitals and other health networks, not just across the country, but around the world. Are the patients that you're seeing of a demographic that is similar to what you're seeing either elsewhere in Connecticut or elsewhere across the country? I mean, is long COVID impacting certain ages, certain racial groups? Who is most susceptible to long COVID?
Well, I think one of the interesting things with COVID is we've seen it change, you know, throughout when it first came. And I think that's the same for the severity and the symptoms that people are developing. And we tend to say, you know, no two people are the same. And that it's the very same thing with COVID. So no two people could experience it the same way. Mm-hmm. It could be very different. So one person could be getting shortness of breath and another person, it could be some neck pain and some headaches. So I think COVID has been very non-discriminating. You know, it can affect people at different ages and at different severities, whether it be, again, a very little or something that is still continuing to significantly impact their everyday activities.
And is the range in severity also similar in that it really is so broad that you can't really define the symptoms or the intensity unless it's on an individual basis?
Yes, individualizing both the assessment and the treatment, I think, is key for, you know, successful outcomes for people. You could have someone who has just what they would say is slight brain fog. So, you know, there are people who are like, geez, you know, I used to lose my keys every once in a while, but I feel like I have to spend a few minutes every day now trying to find something that might be, you know, a little disruptive to them, to someone else who now is on supplemental oxygen, you know, since they had COVID, where that is more of an impact to them, and how are they going to, you know, get up and down the stairs again or make it through the grocery store or through a full day at work?
So before we get into talking about a little bit more about the specific things that Griffin Health is doing for these long COVID-19 patients, can you just enlighten us a little bit about the manifestations of the certain issues that people are having? You mentioned that every case is individual, but are there people who are classified as long COVID sufferers who actually begin experiencing a worsening of the symptoms as time goes on?
So I would say again, yes, while it can be unique to everyone, you know, long COVID is something where, you know, they've they've gone through COVID and they're finding these symptoms haven't returned back to norm, right? So they're still dealing with some form of this, whether it be just one symptom of a small intensity or, again, multiple symptoms. So, you know, what we want to do is we want to be able to look at being able to individualize that for them and then kind of take them on that journey based on what that severity might look like.
Okay. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're with Nancy Carvino. She is with Griffin Health and is the director of Griffin Health's Rehabilitation Services, talking about long COVID, the long haulers, and how Griffin Health is responding to these individuals in their facilities. So, Nancy, tell us specifically what an individual will likely experience as they come into the world of Griffin Health, suspecting or already being diagnosed and referred to you as being long haulers.
Well, thank you very much. So again, what they would do is when you come into Griffin, we start off with an individualized assessment. So our team, again, looks at a patient-centered approach. It allows the ability to have a one-on-one conversation, evaluation with the patient coming in, and allows us to identify what those long COVID symptoms still are for them. From there, we are lucky to have a multidisciplinary approach. So it could start with physical therapy, a physical therapy assessment, and then based on the issues that they're still having, it could also then incorporate occupational therapy, speech therapy, cardiopulmonary rehab referral, or behavioral health services. This allows us to really be able to look at where those impairments are, whether they are more on a physical, a musculoskeletal piece, a mental and emotional component for the person, to create a unique and customized treatment plan for them. It could be a few sessions to really give them some education. We find that that's a key component to this, to help empower patients with knowledge and strategies that they need to be able to succeed. Or again, we could refer them over to some different services, and it could be, you know, a few weeks or a few months of therapy services to really help empower them and allow them to be able to embrace the activities that they used to be able to do, that they want to be able to do, and that they need to be able to do.
How long has it been that you've been involved in treating individuals who are diagnosed with these long COVID symptoms?
So I would say it's definitely been a journey. I mean, Griffin has been here for the community since the start of COVID. So it's really been a natural evolution. As people were coming in for, say, physical therapy, they were telling us what their symptoms were. And as part of that history, we found that part of this limitation was because they've had COVID, things had changed. So their report might be, after getting COVID, I have continued to experience. And that's when we saw this evolving. And it really has been continuously evolving and changing in real time to let the program grow and adapt within the community. So I would say it's been something that's been ongoing and evolving since the start of COVID, but really has been gaining, you know, more awareness as I think more and more people continue to want to get out there and do more things and return to more things and then hear about this and realize they don't have to live with these things when they realize that these are things they don't have to live with.
Looking across the population of patients you've had an opportunity to work with in this specific program, Nancy, tell us the good news and the bad news. How quickly have some of the individuals you've been treating been able to, quote unquote, graduate from the long COVID program and feel that they are past it or getting past it versus individuals where it is really, really challenging and has taken a lot more time?
Well, I think that it all starts off with that knowledge is power, right? So when it comes to starting this process, with this education being a key component, some people might need just a few sessions to learn a home program that they can use and adapt. So, for example, a program like looking at a decrease or loss of taste and smell. Our occupational therapists are able to work with these patients and over a few sessions, over a few weeks, give them the tools they need to be able to continue to work on that and improve upon that and see success and improving that to be able to get back to, you know, things that they need to really look at making an impact in things like taste and smell versus something where it is weakness and there's this idea of fatigue and how do we get them back to what they want to do. That person can vary based on, you know, a few weeks to a few months based on how intense that fatigue is. Are we looking at getting someone you know, up and down that stairs, to walking around their home, to leaving their home and returning to the gym, or returning to work. So that program could be a little bit more involved. But a lot of it, again, is on patient empowerment, patient education, and working with them along this journey with the tools that we have, whether it is hands-on techniques, exercise skills, an exercise program, to really be able to help them on that journey and get them back to it, whether it be a few sessions or a few months.
And is there any type of an age restriction in terms of how young you can begin applying your expertise at Griffin Health to assist the youngest victims of long COVID?
I would say most people that we see are not too young. I would say that as far as post-COVID, we might see someone, you know, as young as in high school that could be affected more with perhaps some pains, like some neck pains, and it might have been more of a postural adaption, and then seeing those in their 20s and 30s and beyond. Again, that could be based on really where they were with the COVID experience, whether it be breathing or fatigue or this cognition or this brain fog. It really could be at any age, so age is not a limiting factor. Again, if you have some kind of impairment that you found that wasn't there or that has gotten worse since you had COVID, then it's important to reach out to your physicians, to reach out to a program like this and see what we can do to help you and really limit those limitations and get you back to the things you need to do.
Excellent. Nancy Corvino is a director of Griffin Health's Rehabilitation Services. Their long COVID-19 therapy provides compassionate, comprehensive, and coordinated approaches to treating persistent COVID-19 symptoms in a way that empowers folks to manage and significantly improve their systems. They're doing this across a number of their facilities in Derby, Oxford, and Shelton. If you'd like more information, you can go to griffinhealth.org/long-COVID. And Nancy, thank you for your information and expertise this morning, and best of luck with the program. Well, as we do so many years over the history of the award-winning For the People, it's that time of year when we bring in our friends from the Lupus Foundation of America to talk about lupus, Walk to End Lupus Now. There are two of those walks coming up in the coming weeks here in Connecticut. And so pleased to be talking with Alicia Scott. She's the Northeast Development Manager for the Lupus Foundation of America. Alicia, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me, John. Really glad to be here.
So briefly, in layman's terms, just explain to listeners who may not be aware what lupus actually is.
Okay, so lupus is a chronic disease, and it can cause inflammation and pain in any part of your body. It's an autoimmune condition, which means that your immune system, which is the system in the body that usually fights infections, actually attacks healthy tissue instead. So in layman's terms, as you said, it's like your body is fighting with itself, essentially. It can attack your joints, your skin, kidneys, heart, literally any part of your body. So, yeah, that's the easiest way for me to explain it. It's a very complex disease, but that's the gist of it.
And at what age can people be diagnosed with this? Is this a birth to senior years kind of situation that somebody can get diagnosed at any time?
Yes, children can be diagnosed. Generally, patients are diagnosed between the ages of 18 and 44. Lupus predominantly affects women 90% of the time, and women of color are 2 to 3 times more likely to be diagnosed than their counterparts. So usually that 18 to 44 during women's childbearing years are when they are diagnosed. And, you know, just as an aside, I not only work for the Lupus Foundation, but I am also a person living with it as well. And I was diagnosed at 36.
Oh, okay. So we've got two lupus survivors on the program this morning. Mm-hmm. Of course, we'll be talking to Colleen Hann in just a little while to get her perspective. But
yes.
So did you, were you diagnosed with lupus before you came to work for the foundation?
Yes. Yes, I was. I had been experiencing symptoms. And, you know, my story was very unique in the fact that I was diagnosed very early. I went to the doctor. I was referred to a rheumatologist and diagnosed. Usually it can take up to 6 years and visits to several doctors before finding out. So, yes, you know, after being diagnosed, I got involved in walks and became a committee member, team captain, and then eventually ended up working for the Lupus Foundation. So full circle for me.
Hmm. So tell folks out there who may be really, really desperate or interested in gaining more knowledge and resources, a couple of the things that the foundation can provide on a day-to-day basis to those like yourself and Colleen who are living with lupus.
Okay, well, let me just say that our website, lupus.org, is chock full of resources. We have a National Resource Center on Lupus, which is a collection of up-to-date information and resources on lupus. You can log on and literally any question, you can type in a question, you can type in a topic, and it will provide you with information. We have an expert series, which is our monthly educational podcast series, which features presenters on that are experts on certain topics. So it could be a physician that's an expert in nephrology, and they'll do an expert series on lupus nephritis. So we have that, and those are recorded and uploaded to our website, and you're able, you know, any visitors are able to go and access those.
Yeah.
Yep, we have our Lupus and You education. Oh, I'm sorry, our Lupus and You education programs that we hold within the region and on the national level. They're all done virtually still. We're still very virtual with most of our events, even though our walk is in person, which we're excited about.
Yeah.
But yes, literally, you can find anything on our website. And just one last, we have Lupus Connect, which is an online community where members can engage and share their experience and find emotional support. It's akin to a Facebook, if you will.
Sure, yeah.
That same type of format.
Or a social page.
And people can comment. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing that's really important as we appeal to everyone to consider participating in one of Connecticut's two Walk to End Lupus Now events is the research that's happening. And this is cutting edge. And I know we're going to hear a little bit from Colleen about a study she was involved in a year or so ago. But, in brief, can you just tell us from your perspective how research is giving you and your many colleagues who are also lupus survivors greater hope?
Yes, definitely. Our funding from our walks allows us to fund grants for top researchers in the lupus community. So we have childhood lupus that we fund. We established the first and only national childhood lupus research program. Stem cell research, you know, stem cell therapy is one of the most promising frontiers in lupus research today. So we have funding for that. We also, with our research, we provide grants to organizations such as the Systemic Lupus International Collaborative Clinics. So we do fund clinical trials, which, like you said, Colleen, we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
The Childhood Arthritis and Rheumatology Research Alliance. So we really are working to make sure that our patients, you know, live full lives. Yes. We work to improve the quality of lives for those living with lupus through identifying the cause of lupus, discovering better ways to control the symptoms, and ultimately, the ultimate goal is to find a cure.
Good. Well, we're going to come back and close out the show with you, Alicia. But before we go to a break and then meet Colleen again, just quickly let people know the two events that are coming up that they can consider supporting. The first one's coming up in Hartford in just a couple weeks.
Yes, yes. Thank you. So the Walk to End Lupus CT Hartford will be held on September 25th. At Pratt & Whitney Stadium, also known as Rentschler Field. Registration time, if you're not already registered online, is at 2. The walk will begin at 3. And then we have the Walk to End Lupus CT Norwalk on Sunday, October 23rd at Calf Pasture Beach. Registration, again, for those that are not registered prior, 1 o'clock, walk starts at 2. Looking forward to seeing you out there.
Great. Folks, stick with us. We're going to meet lupus survivor Colleen Han and then talk with Alicia for another moment or two about getting out to the walks. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be back right after the break. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, September is Suicide Prevention Month. If you or someone you love are struggling, feeling hopeless, and need crisis and suicide prevention assistance, all you need to call is 211. In Connecticut, 211 is the point of entry for all crisis intervention. In Connecticut, you can also call 988, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, or 800-273-TALK. You can also reach out to the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services Action Line at 800-HOPE-135 and the Youth Mobile Crisis Line also through Connecticut 211. Do not take any action to harm yourself without talking to someone who cares. Someone is waiting to give you your hope back. Please, just call 211 or 988 right now. Well, as we heard from Alicia, we're now going to switch and speak with Colleen Han, a good friend of ours here on the award-winning For the People. She's been kind enough to be with us before. Colleen is a lupus survivor, and she is a big supporter of the Walk to End Lupus Now. Colleen, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. It's nice to hear from you again. And I'm looking forward to the walk this year.
So we really come to you to get a little bit more personal information about why people should either consider walking or consider supporting this cause. And as we already had mentioned, there is not only support being offered through the foundation for folks like yourself or those who love someone who is a lupus survivor, but also because there's important research that's being done. And even you as a survivor who's not a clinician or really like involved in the nuts and bolts of the foundation, you're keeping pretty good resources and up to date on the research that's going on.
Yes, the Lupus Foundation of America provides a partnership between its investigators and the people with lupus, and they have scientific expertise, but they don't have the knowledge that comes from being a person with lupus. So it's basically a program that we can help each other with, and they offer different types of clinical trials as well that they're working on right now, because there is very little medications out there to help people with lupus.
So to remind people that may have heard us talk before, when were you diagnosed, or what is your lupus story?
Yes, I was diagnosed with lupus in 2010, but I have actually had symptoms my whole life. I was very sick when I was in college with lung problems, and I had to miss a semester of school, Then I got a lot of infections, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I went to 6 different doctors, even got 2 rheumatologists to confirm that it was, in fact, lupus. And I basically, you know, have had a lot of infections. I've had problems with my skin. Right now I'm having problems with my hands and my arms and legs. I can't get into a tub myself, and I'm unfortunately unable to work at this time. So it's been a real toll, and I think a lot of people don't realize what lupus is, because when they look at you, you don't look sick. And the challenging thing is that most people have different symptoms. Nobody has the same 2 situation going on when you're diagnosed with lupus.
So what do you understand about work that's being done toward the cure? I mean, have you heard about or even talked to anybody at the professional level who may have suggested some sort of a research program or a study or any type
yes.
of?
My doctor has had me involved in a study. 2 years ago, I participated in a synthetic THC study, which is still being approved by the government.
Mm-hmm.
But it really tremendously helped me quite a bit. And it was a very interesting study because you had to calculate your pain levels every day, write them down. And then if you missed a dose in the medication, you had to be very specific as what was going on. And this clinical trial has been going on for a while. So I'm hoping that it's getting closer to being approved by the government. There's also another one that was going to be done in Long Island, but I didn't qualify for it because of a certain medication that I take. They want to find a connection between brainwaves and how it affects lupus. Oh. So I was going to be taking a medication, and they were going to be doing like PET scans and CAT scans and MRIs, and they would drive me all the way down to the hospital in Long Island. But I unfortunately wasn't able to qualify for that one. But that's what I'm aware of as of right now. And they have even done some stem cell research for lupus as well, but that I'm not as familiar with.
So what will you be able to tell folks who may be grappling with this situation themselves in terms of the resources and support that you've been able to get from the foundation and its Connecticut Northwestern branch here that Alicia's affiliated with?
Yes, if you go to the website, lupus.org, and they have a variety of sections in there. They have a resource center. You can find local support. You can donate. You can look at the resource center, and you can learn about lupus from the experts. And they have different articles and facts, and they provide a lot of educational programs and support. We have a walk committee that we meet regularly to plan the walks in advance. So that's why this walk is really important, to be able to promote those programs.
What have been a couple of the most important services or support initiatives that you've sought and gotten help with from the foundation?
Well, they can't really recommend a doctor. It's not really allowed by the platform. But I have met a great group of friends through the walk committee, and several of my friends have recommended doctors for me to get treatment. I go to a rheumatologist at Columbia Presbyterian in New York City, and I was able to be introduced to her through my colleagues. And it's been wonderful for me because she has so many more resources than a local doctor was able to provide me originally when I was being diagnosed.
So you could amplify a hopeful attitude for folks that might be listening that may have just recently gotten the diagnosis or suspect they have it and will soon get it.
I believe so because I've been able to manage it fairly well. As I mentioned, unfortunately, I'm not able to work at this time, but I can do other daily activities. And I believe that the programs that the Lupus Foundation provides has given me the tools that I need to be successful, and it helps me to be confident to be able to share my story to people like you and other organizations that I've gone out and been an advocate for. We even go down to Capitol Hill and speak to our constituents annually. And this year, they were very successful in being able to get a Medicare or Medicaid, I can't remember which one it was, but a cap on the prescription plan.
Oh, okay. So that any medications tied to treating lupus are a little bit more affordable, or at least there's a solid knowledge there as to how much an individual may need to spend each year before some support comes their
Correct.
way.
Correct. Yeah. Like, I think the cap was $2,000 that they had agreed to for certain plans.
Okay. Well, before we let you go, we do want you to shout out everyone within the sounds of our voices to come to the walk, because as you pointed out, you can't look at somebody with lupus and say that person's sick with something as serious as lupus. There may be a little bit of a stigma there involved. And coming out to one of these walks to end lupus now gives people exposure to individuals like yourself to get a little bit more empathy.
Correct. And it's such a positive environment on that day. Families come, they have picnics, people bring relatives from all across the country. We have Malik Rose as our host this year. That's actually for the New York City Walk. Mm-hmm. But the Connecticut Walk will be at Calf Pasture Beach, and they'll have lots of tents and different activities for everyone to come out and celebrate the loved one that they have with lupus.
Thank you, Colleen. Colleen Han is a good friend of ours here at the award-winning For the People. We've talked to her on a number of occasions, and a great spokesperson for the Lupus Foundation of America's Northeastern Chapter. She hopes, as we do, that you'll attend the upcoming walk to end lupus now. Colleen, thank you so much for your time today. Well, that was a great, great chat with Colleen, Alicia, and thanks for sticking with us to the end of the program. We just wanted to give you one more opportunity to remind people how they can participate in both of Connecticut's upcoming Walk to End Lupus Now events.
Yes. So you can go to lupus.org/CT Hartford or lupus.org/CT Norwalk. You can register there. You can contact me at scotta@lupus.org, and I'd be happy to register you. Or for Hartford, my colleague Michelle Inslee is Inslee@lupus.org. She'd be happy to get you registered. We're just hoping that everyone comes out and has a good time and just celebrate for a good cause.
And the Hartford Walk on September 25th is at the Pratt & Whitney Rentschler Stadium, and in Norwalk at a wonderful, beautiful seaside location at Calf Pasture Beach on October 23rd. We hope everybody comes out and supports this important cause. And I want to thank you, Alicia Scott, Northeast Development Manager for Lupus Foundation of America, a lupus survivor, along with our friend Colleen Han. Folks, lupus.org is the website to go if you need more information. Thank you for your time today, Alicia. Well, we're pleased to have our friends from Wheeler Health back on the program this morning, and doubly pleased to be joined by their president and CEO, Sabrina Troche. Lots of exciting news happening at Wheeler Health. Just a few weeks ago at the Wheeler Community Health Center in Waterbury, a huge number of folks gathered to celebrate the delivery of $650,000 to create and offer an intensive outpatient program for children and youth in that city. And then just a few days later, over in the Bristol, New Britain area, an additional grant was delivered to Wheeler Health to support other important work, their Walk With Me program. So we're going to talk about both of those developments with Sabrina. Welcome to the program this morning.
Thank you for having me, and absolutely my pleasure to talk about Wheeler and some exciting new programs that we have.
So let's start over in Bristol then. Tell us a little bit about the Walk With Me program and how the grant that recently came to you is going to make even more of a difference in terms of supporting the LGBTQ plus families in that area.
Okay. Well, the Walk With Me is a specialized outpatient treatment track for LGBTQ plus identifying individuals of all ages. It provides integrated behavioral health, medical, and peer support services to really help individuals, families to understand, to support them as they are considering transitions and or providing the supports they need to meet their specific needs. Beneficial in having this program with Wheeler, because we are an integrated primary care and behavioral health provider, we're able to provide a continuum of LGBTQ plus responsive services, from comprehensive health screenings to gender-affirming hormone therapy, primary care, psychiatric services, and behavioral health services that really focus on the individual, the family, and also offer group modalities or group therapy.
So are those who come to this particular program geographically exclusive to the greater Bristol, New Britain region?
What we're finding is that there is a lack of services in many parts of the state. So we are finding that that we're getting referrals and individuals presenting that really are representative of the entire state. And because of that, we've looked to expand the program. So when we started the program approximately a year ago or so, we started in one location, in our Plainville location, and we quickly saw that there was such an incredible need for these services in other communities. Over the course of the year, we've expanded the program to our Hartford location. We're currently in our Bristol location, and we're currently working to offer the Walk With Me program also in our Waterbury location. Once again, what we're seeing is an incredible demand for these services and really a lack of existing specialized services for this population.
Is the ability to expand and sustain Walk With Me through Wheeler Health going to be dependent on additional private source funding, or is there also some possibility of accessing some state or federal or other non-private sector underwriting?
While we have the opportunity to bill for a number of the clinical components associated with the program, there's other components of the program that we do need to continue to seek either private and or state funding for. That component, one of those components, is the peer support services. So as part of the Walk With Me team, we have a peer specialist. This is an individual who is from the LGBTQ plus community, someone who has lived experience and a wonderful instrumental tool in engaging individuals and their family members in being able to support them. And it's a critical component, but not a component that we can at this point bill for. So we do continue to look for private and state dollars to support that critical component.
Well, before we move on and talk about some more exciting news happening out of the Waterbury Clinic, tell me just a little bit about the success of the Walk With Me program in your assessment.
We have been very successful in connecting individuals in many of our sites to the comprehensive care that they needed. In many instances, individuals within the LGBTQ plus community who were seeking care needed to go to multiple providers and have to tell their story to multiple providers. Having the ability to work with one team to address your primary care, your psychiatric, and your behavioral components is huge. And really, the benefits we're seeing from it, when we look at the volume of patients being referred, the volume is really because patients who are part of the program are communicating, are educating, are connecting other individuals from the community with these services. And so I think the best marketing for any program is someone who is benefiting from the program and being able to communicate that to others.
So now now the challenge and the goal is being able to get to a point where you're able to attempt to meet the demand for it. So hopefully folks that may be listening who may be inclined may think of Wheeler Health when they're looking at ways to support this kind of initiative. And it's so great to hear that it's been so successful so far and that the word of mouth traction on it is really building the base of individuals who are benefiting from it most. Folks, if you just joined us, we're talking with Sabrina Troche. She is president and CEO of Wheeler Health, who was in my hometown of Waterbury at their Wheeler Public Health Clinic for some incredible news back in mid-August. And that was the delivery of $650,000 to create and offer an intensive outpatient program for children and youth in the city. Sabrina, including members of your team on previous For the People programs and so many others who work in this arena, we've been hearing about the epidemic of mental health issues and concerns, especially amongst our youngest residents here in Connecticut. Let us know how this new outpatient program is going to get put together and how quickly will it be available for not only youths in Waterbury, but those who also probably through word of mouth sharing of its success may bring in others from elsewhere.
Yes. So in our Waterbury Family Health and Wellness Center, we're pleased to have opened up, effective in July, a new child adolescent intensive outpatient program. It is a first of its kind in that area, and we're looking to work with Waterbury and the greater Waterbury community to ensure that that children and adolescents who need more intensive behavioral health services are connected to these services. As we've been hearing, child mental health has been identified as a significant priority during this last legislative session. We know child mental health and mental health in general, we had a crisis prior to the pandemic. We know that COVID really exacerbated. We've seen increases in depression, anxiety, difficulty in concentrating, in being able to thrive in schools. And so this program comes at a time where it is most needed. An intensive outpatient program are for children and adolescents, and we're running programs for kids as young as 7 all the way to 18 years of age, who are showing signs and symptoms of depression, anxiety, and who are really struggling at home, struggling in the community, struggling in schools. And what the intensive outpatient program does, it works with the child, it works with the family for 4 to 6 weeks. Traditionally, it could be longer, it could be shorter, but really works to help provide adolescents, children and adolescents, the skills needed to be able to be successful at home, in the community, and in school. A component of the intensive outpatient program is working individually with clinicians, but a core component is also working with other children, same ages, with similar issues in group settings. And for children and adolescents, that's really important because they're able to see that they're not the only ones potentially struggling with an issue. And they can build that bond with a peer and be able to support one another, which is wonderful. The other component, of course, is working with the family. So we want to make sure that the child and the adolescent is building their skills, but we also want to support the family so that there's a nurturing, they're able to nurture and continue to support the child or the adolescent within the home setting.
So, excuse me, at the peak of its operational capacity, this program is going to be able to sustain almost 150 young people at a time, right?
So we're looking to serve 150 children annually, and that's really in the first year, considering that we have startup. And while we started in July, traditionally July is a slower time of year because many of our referrals come to us directly from schools, and so we started off. With the program in July, we knew it was going to be a slow start because most of our referrals that come from the schools weren't there. But we're geared up and we're ready to go, and we're making the connections with our local schools to ensure that they know that there's capacity and we can see kids right away. So, and that's the other piece with the program is, we encourage children, adolescents, family members to just walk in and we can see individuals immediately.
Oh, that's great. That was what I was about to ask. The school-based or institutional referrals are not the main pipeline providing the support for nearly all the kids in the program. This is something that if there's a concerned parent or caregiver or a guardian or a youth themselves, they can reach out and hopefully engage.
Definitely. Once again, we have an open access model, so you can walk right in and a clinician will begin the assessment and begin to come up with a treatment plan with the child and the parent guardian. We also have our navigation center, which is our call center. Anyone in the community, any individual can call and be connected to any of our services through that number too.
So before we let you go, Sabrina, just remind people where they can go to start this engagement.
Sure. So our Waterbury Health and Wellness Center is located at 855 Lakewood Road in Waterbury. Our navigation center is can be accessed at 888-793-3500.
Very good. We appreciate you taking the time to review the programs that you are bringing to bear to help support not only our youngest community members who may be suffering from trauma or mental health crises, but also through the Walk With Me program in Greater Bristol and New Britain, and growing into Hartford and hopefully soon in Waterbury, this other additional program for LGBTQ plus individuals and youth. Sabrina Troche is president and CEO of Wheeler Health. We appreciate your time and all the great work you and your team are doing. Thanks, Sabrina.
You
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.